You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today after 7, it's Snap Judgment, bringing us intriguing storytelling about the defining moments in people's lives. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, in 2010, the United States Supreme Court ruled in the case of Citizens United, a conservative political organization, versus the Federal Elections Commission.
Citizens United claimed that political spending was a form of free speech protected under the Constitution. In a 5-4 decision, the court sided with the group over the FEC.
Since then, the political battle over campaign contributions has reached a fever pitch, with presidential candidates this year calling for an overhaul of the campaign finance system.
One author, our next guest, says instituting change from the top down may be less effective overall, and that if people want to see a change to the Citizens United ruling, they should work from the grassroots level to affect that change. Those groups, he says, should look at playbooks from a couple of recent success stories, the National Rifle Association and the Marriage Equality Movement.
Here in Wisconsin, 11 communities approved ballot referendums opposing the Citizens United ruling in last week's elections. David Cole joins us now. He's an author and professor of law and public policy at Georgetown University Law Center, and his new book is called Engines of Liberty, The Power of Citizen Activists to Make Constitutional Law. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to start off with what some of the presidential candidates this year have said. Campaign finance reforms have been a hot topic this election season. Here's a sampling from Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton.
No nominee of mine will get that nomination unless he or she is prepared, when they get on the Supreme Court, to as soon as possible vote to overturn Citizens United.
I love the idea of campaign finance reform. And one of the things you should do is everybody should be known. If somebody gives $1 million or $2 million or $5 million, it should be known.
Let's remember, Citizens United, one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in our country's history, was actually a case about a right-wing attack on me and my campaign. A right-wing organization took aim at me and ended up damaging our entire democracy. So, yes, you're not going to find anybody more committed to aggressive campaign finance reform than me.
So, David, there you heard from three top candidates this year. What is it about campaign finance reform, and specifically Citizens United, that has been so resonant with voters and with politicians this season?
Well, I think it's a decision that is seen as sort of opening the floodgates to very rich individuals and very rich corporations to flood campaigns and drown out the voices of ordinary people and blind, really. It's a decision that was blind to the real risks that that kind of money unleashed in political campaigns can cause to the legitimacy of our democratic process.
What kind of data do we have about how people, Democrats and Republicans, feel about that Citizens United ruling?
It is one of the most unpopular decisions the Supreme Court has ever issued. Polls typically find that about 80 to 85% of Americans think Citizens United was wrongly decided, and 70% of Republicans tend to think that Citizens United was wrongly decided, which is part of the reason that Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump are all in agreement that there's something wrong there.
Bernie Sanders in particular has made this a pillar of his campaign, looking to overturn that ruling. But how hard is it to get a Supreme Court ruling overturned?
It's not easy, but I think where you've got a substantial portion of the American public who already believe the decision is wrong, you've got sort of the roots of the change there. The court doesn't, historically, the court has not generally differed dramatically from where public opinion is. And so if campaign finance reform activists organize and engage strategically in a range of reform measures, I think principally at the state and local levels, I think we have a very good chance of seeing Citizens United radically cut back, if not overturned altogether, in our lifetimes.
So you're saying looking at the not necessarily the national level right at the Supreme Court, but you're talking about looking at the local level and starting there. Why start there instead of just trying to get the court to overturn it?
Right. Well, I say that largely because of what I found in working on my book, Engines of Liberty, which really examined the two most successful constitutional reform movements of the past 40 years, the marriage equality movement and the NRA's effort to get the individual right to bear arms recognized as a Second Amendment right. In both instances, those groups faced a court that would not, at the outset, have considered their claim legitimate. Marriage equality was unthinkable 20, 25 years ago, and the court had long held that the Second Amendment didn't protect an individual right to bear arms. So they didn't file lawsuits in federal court and try to convince the courts that somehow the Supreme Court got it wrong. What they did instead was start in the states, go to the states that were most sympathetic to them, and start there. So the gay rights group started in New England, the NRA started in Florida, develop state law reforms and state constitutional arguments in those states, then migrate those to, you know, slightly less sympathetic states, and only when they got sufficient momentum developed in the states did the argument jump the tracks and was it able to succeed at the federal level. And I think that is really the model for constitutional reform today.
We're talking with David Cole right now. He's an author and professor of law and public policy at Georgetown University Law Center, talking about Citizens United and campaign finance and looking at how David Cole says the way to go is to affect change to Citizens United at the grassroots level, local level. And in the model that you're talking about, David, are we looking at a Supreme Court who essentially mirrors the mood of the country?
In a way, yes. I mean, what I argue in the book is that the Supreme Court doesn't so much change constitutional law as recognize that it has changed. The Supreme Court in 1972 was presented with a case that said that gay couples should have the same right to marry as heterosexual couples, and it dismissed the argument in a single sentence. Said it doesn't even raise a substantial legal question. We're not even going to address it on the merits. 2015, the court, actually probably a more conservative court than the court in 1972, facing the same arguments, no different arguments, recognized a constitutional right of same-sex couples to marry on the same terms as heterosexual couples. So what changed? The arguments didn't change before the court. The court didn't actually change in terms of getting more liberal. If anything, it was more conservative. But what changed was the ground underneath, the ground against which this argument was being considered. And how did that change? It changed through a variety of advocacy initiatives that gay rights groups did, which largely were focused at the state level, but also included public messaging and pressure on entertainment and radio and news and television news to present gay characters and individuals in a more positive light. It was the force of people working together through these organizations outside of the courts that made it possible for the argument, the exact same argument, which was rejected as completely insubstantial in 1972, to be successful in 2015.
You're talking about a model for creating constitutional law that I think advocates who want campaign finance reform would say that's going to take forever. If I start state by state, city by city, that's a years-long, maybe decades-long road compared with maybe just trying to overturn the case right at the Supreme Court's doors.
Yeah, it does take a long time. It takes what I call patient incrementalism, and that is the strategy that the marriage equality folks pursued. That is also the strategy that the NRA folks pursued, and they were ultimately successful in doing that. And the thing is that for constitutional law is difficult to change. It doesn't change overnight. It doesn't change on a dime. It takes a sort of extended period of democratic engagement so that the legal and popular culture can shift in order for that constitutional change to be reflected in Supreme Court decisions. And that's how it's generally happened, and I think that is how it will happen here. But there, you know, the good news is that campaign finance reform groups already are doing this. They are advancing novel public financing schemes in a number of cities and states. They've been adopted that empower the small donors and provide substantial public financing to candidates who agree to limit their raising of money from large donors. They've also proposed and enacted transparency requirements that respond to this problem of secret and dark money, and those are, you know, that's the beginning of the movement that over time, if it gets adopted in a series of states, I think will then present an opportunity for the Supreme Court to reconsider its rationale in Citizens United.
And David, just briefly before we take callers, you also point to scholarship as being an important tool for people who might want to look at overturning Citizens United, that this is something that the National Rifle Association did very effectively.
That's right. When they started, really in the 1970s was when the NRA became a political organization focused on establishing this right. And they, at that time, the Legal Academy was in line with the courts in saying the Second Amendment protects only the state's rights to have militias and not individual rights to have guns. But the NRA supported scholars who took a different view. And by the time the case reached the Supreme Court in 2008, the majority of law review articles published took the view that indeed the Second Amendment does protect an individual right to bear arms, and a number of prominent liberal constitutional law scholars, including Larry Tribe at Harvard, had endorsed that view. So they changed the scholarship, and that, I think, made it easier for the court, which in fact cited some of that scholarship in its decision, to reach that point of view. And people are doing the same thing now with respect to campaign finance reform, challenging the empirical presumptions that the court relied upon, challenging some of the logic of some of the arguments that it has made, advancing new legitimate interests for regulating money in the campaign context, and all of that I think does contribute to creating the space for the court to recognize that constitutional law should change.
David Cole is our guest right now. He's an author and professor of law and public policy at Georgetown University Law Center. And he's with us to talk about how citizen activists and others can learn from the National Rifle Association and the marriage equality movement if they want to reverse the Supreme Court's ruling on Citizens United.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you like to see that Citizens United ruling reversed, or do you think it's shifted the political landscape in the U.S.? There's no going back. There shouldn't be any going back. And were you involved in any of the local referenda in Wisconsin, either last week or over the years, that has passed local initiatives calling for a change in campaign finance laws? Call in now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about how our guest says citizen activists can affect constitutional law. We're looking at this topic through the lens of the 2009 Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that Citizens United ruling, of the way money works in American politics? Are you hoping for a change? Have you been active in efforts to make that change? Or do you want to make the case for the system as it is since that 2009 ruling? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
David Cole is with us now. His latest book is called Engines of Liberty, The Power of Citizen Activists to Make Constitutional Law. And we'll go to our callers now. We have Matt on the line in Viroqua. Matt, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I remember the day that I read in the paper that Citizens United had passed and how upsetting that was. I was sitting in a lunch area at my school. I'm a full-time college student. And arguing against the logic that their justices used to support Citizens United, doesn't seem like it should be terribly difficult, because saying that because somebody's more wealthy, and I tend to have capitalist ideas more than anything, that's not capitalism, it's corruption. Saying that someone's more wealthy, for that reason alone, they should have more say in our political system, It just doesn't jive. I'd like to see a law that says the more degrees somebody has, or, you know, the more scholarly articles they've read, they have more say in our political system, rather than because you made a bunch of money, you have more sway.
Man, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate that. And David, did any of the arguments he was making there get at some of the scholarship veins that people are looking at when they look at overturning Citizens United?
I think the central problem with Citizens United was that the court said the only legitimate interest the government has in regulating spending on campaigns is to avoid bribery and the appearance of bribery. And there is no other legitimate concern. So one of the things scholars have done is to sort of point to alternative concerns, because if your only legitimate basis for regulating is bribery, then there are very limited restrictions. You can't restrict spending, because spending is not a bribe. A bribe is a contribution, not an expenditure. A number of scholars have argued that, you know, that just misses what is concerning about the expenditure of large amounts of money. One problem is that it creates an incentive for politicians and representatives to pay attention to some people, those who give and spend lots of money, far disproportionately to other people, those who don't have those kinds of resources. And our system is based on a theory that the representatives represent all of their constituents and not just the rich ones. So the interest in equalizing the distorting effects of money on the political campaign system is one that I think can be articulated as a common sense rationale, can be justified through reference to precedents and the like, and I think ultimately could lead the court to be more open to a much more stringent regulation of spending in political campaigns. But that will come only if there's both scholarship and political pressure in a sufficiently wide swath of states and forums that the court feels the need to adjust or recognize that our constitutional law needs to be adjusted.
Well, thank you for that call, Matt. And we're going to go next to George in Madison. George, hello.
Hello there. Mr. Cole, you bring up some issues, or I guess some instances of resolutions being passed to change language. I didn't hear, and maybe I missed it, the full discussion of the 700 communities in Wisconsin that have passed the United to Amend and Move to Amend resolutions, 72 in Wisconsin of those 700, of which 11 were last Tuesday. That is the movement that's going to be, all of this changing the language here is not going to do anything. And I didn't hear you bring up the biggest movement that is out there.
So that's a great question. That's a great question. So that the movement that you're referring to is the movement to put out a call and support through local ballot initiatives an effort to amend the Constitution, to overturn Citizens United through the formal amendment process. I think that's a terribly important organizing tool. It allows for this issue to be raised at the local level in all parts of the country, and I think it's very important for that purpose. I don't think it will lead to an amendment of the Constitution. It is remarkably difficult to amend the Constitution. The Constitution has been amended in the formal way. It's been amended only 27 times. The first 10 were in the Bill of Rights, and that was sort of part of the initial bargain, so really only 17 times since then. The last amendment to pass was the 27th Amendment. All it did was say that when members of Congress vote themselves a raise, they can't get the raise. It has to go to the people who come in after them. That passed in the 1980s. It was first introduced and proposed in something like 1790. It took almost 200 years to pass. It's very, very difficult to amend the Constitution in that way. So, yes, that's an important political organizing tool, but that's, I think, not likely to be the way in the end that this constitutional law gets changed.
And, Dave, we have just a couple of seconds left here, but do you think that with Antonin Scalia gone from the court, one of the most vocal conservative voices, that this swings the balance at all?
Absolutely. And the justice who replaces Justice Scalia and any new justices that are appointed by the next president, given that three of the justices will be 80 or over during the next president's tenure, will obviously play a critical role. And they're being put on the court at a time when there is very broad concern about this case makes it more likely that we will succeed in cutting back on or overturning Citizens United.
David, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David Cole is an author and professor of law and public policy at Georgetown University Law Center. His most recent book is called Engines of Liberty.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, our guest reporter takes stock of the on-the-ground impact of recent budget cuts for the UW system.
And we check out the history of psychedelics in America, from rock and roll's Deadheads to internet pioneers.
All that and look at the latest news of the day coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Tomorrow morning after 7, Joy and her guests go out on the campaign trail to figure out what younger voters want from presidential candidates. That's tomorrow morning after 7 here on the Ideas Network. Coming up next is the news from NPR and WPR, and then political analyst Harry Enten from 538.com joins us to talk about the ongoing search for a presidential nominee for both parties. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.